Welcome to the What's Good podcast. I'm your host, Milton Young. Welcome to episode 23. I'm here with my guest. She needs no introduction, but I'm going to introduce her anyway. Deja, what's good?
You know I got to do it. What's good?
Oh my God. How are you?
I am walking on sunshine. I
mean, you are, aren't you?
Night right now, but you know,
everything's going good.
Everything.
There's a lot of good things going on with you right now, actually.
Yeah, I mean, even the things that aren't going good, still something to learn from. Mm-hmm. So then it turns into a good. Mm-hmm. So yeah, everything's good.
So you were one of my first guests.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will write into me and ask questions. And everyone's asking for updates and what's going on with you.
That's so I had so to hit crazy. You back.
No, it's awesome. It's
That's
awesome.
So crazy.
We have awesome conversations, so it doesn't surprise me. But that's why I wanted to have you on the show, because you're so interesting. You're always moving mm-hmm. to improve yourself and do something different and challenge. And you don't run into a lot of people like that. So.
Aw, thank you.
Yeah. So what's good with you? Everyone's asking about the bar. My sister.
The bar.
Yeah.
Okay, that I find out at the end of this month.
Okay.
So,
how did you feel about it? Preparation and
I got a new bar prep company this time. Mm-hmm. The first time I took it, I did Barbary, and like, not knocking Barbary or anything, but it just didn't work for me. Not that it didn't work. There are some parts of it that I liked, some parts that I didn't. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it all falls on me and the work that I needed to do and that I didn't put in. Mm-hmm. But Marino kept me more accountable because I had a tutor this time.
Oh, wow.
So I had to have things done by a certain point in time before I reported back to my tutor.
Okay.
I had 3-hour-long FaceTime sessions, so like...
Wow.
And it was cheaper.
Nice.
But I felt much more prepared. I was studying at the same time I was working full-time, which I hadn't had to do that before. I was usually working part-time.
Yeah.
Or not working at all. But this time was full-time, so I had to figure out how to balance working, studying, and trying to work out to keep myself sane.
That working out part is huge. A lot of people don't value that enough. But so did this time going in with this new preparation, did you feel more confident going into the test? Did you feel anything different in that regard? More prepared? Anything?
I felt more prepared. I also felt confident that even, you know, well... taking it as many times as I have, I felt that I know everything I need to know. Mm-hmm. At some point, I've touched on every single piece and section and topic of what they're going to test on. I knew what patterns to look for. They give you some new tips that I hadn't been given before. Mm-hmm. So this time going in, I was like, even what I have in my head, that's going to be enough.
Yeah.
And I had to walk in there thinking that, and I had to walk in there being confident, focused, and knowing that I was going to use every minute putting something on that computer.
Wow, that's awesome. I also know that when you were going through, like right up to the day of the test, you had some pretty big conflicts, or I wouldn't say distractions, but some life got in the way, right? It was pulling you in a different direction.
Yeah, it's funny because looking back, I'm like, what was going on? But like at that moment in time, it was just like a lot of external stress, my own anxiety. Mm. I had just, we had just gotten off of session.
Explain to everyone what a session is for government.
So I work for the New York State Senate majority, and in the New York State Legislature, there's session. Session is from January to June. And it's basically, you can work anywhere between an 8-hour to 16, 24-hour day.
Damn.
And you don't get compensated for it. They're just overage hours that you can use when you're off session. But session is when they're working on passing the budget for New York State and then also passing certain bills. Because you only pass bills during session.
Okay.
So... there are meetings, constituents coming in, lobbyists coming in, meeting with like people of like CEOs and presidents of companies.
Wow.
Meeting with Congress people sometimes.
So long days, but also mentally draining days because of the type of people you're engaging.
Oh, yeah. And then they have receptions at night.
Oh man.
So if you don't have to go, but they suggest you go, and it's good for networking and making, you know, connections. And I've made so many good connections that are invaluable. So it was definitely a learning experience, but it was baptism by fire. My boss even said so. Learning as you go. And if you screw up, you just gotta keep going. Wow.
So you're doing that while you're preparing for the bar exam, studying and all that, or you're just coming off
I of was that? Just coming off okay. of that. So like the anxiety of coming off of that, going into off session, which is usually kind of a break, but my boss was like, we're gonna use this to get ahead on certain things. So we were taking a big my topic for the office is cannabis and banking. Mm-hmm. So we were supposed to be focusing heavily on that this summer. So I had to, you know, find out who the big players are in cannabis. I had been working on it all session, but just like actually figuring out how we're going to try and solve this issue of cannabis and banking in New York, which, you know, of course, is like one of the biggest issues because state doesn't trump federal. Federal always trumps state. So because marijuana is still legal at the federal level, it doesn't matter what you try to do at the state level, because it's still gonna put banks under fire if a federal agency decides to come down on them, or FDIC or DEA, whomever. But I was coming off of that. I was starting to study. So now I have the anxiety from that.
Mm-hmm.
Still working 8-hour days.
Still training jiu-jitsu.
Still training, but then I had to cut that down. So then that was giving me anxiety, because I'm like, I always feel like I'm starting at zero again when it comes to this. And then my aunt died. I found out a few weeks before the end of session that she was terminally ill, stage 4 cancer. She had only told a few people.
Right.
She had actually got diagnosed 2 years prior, right after we found out my cousin Timothy was killed by a white supremacist. So she was dealing with it then. She told a few people. She told my father. My father was one of them. He didn't tell us because she didn't want anyone to know. But then it was getting to a point where it had metastasized to her. It was lung cancer that metastasized to her brain.
Oh, man.
So she had to tell us because it wasn't looking good. So I got to see her once. I had to go down to New York City for work, and I was like, well, I'm just going to take a day and go see her first and go see how she's doing. And then my sister, because she didn't realize I was driving to the bar a few weeks later that Tuesday, I got into a car accident the week before the bar. So just stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff. That's what I'm saying. A lot of life happened right up to that bar.
Yeah, this lady hit me. And then she ran up to the police and lied and said I crossed the double line. I was like, lady, there are two lanes going in the right direction of traffic and then one lane on the opposite side during a green light. That makes no sense for me to cross over in opposite traffic. I'm looking to die if I'm doing that.
Yeah, right.
So there was that. But that Tuesday morning I was driving and I don't remember if I called my sister or my sister called me, but she was on the phone with the doctors, because my sister is a doctor. She's a psychiatrist, but she still remembers like a lot of the stuff from medical school, and you know, a lot of my family's treating her as like the go-to for everything.
Of course.
So she was trying to make sure she did everything right for her up until the end. And she's like telling me that at 2 a.m, she was trying to get her to calm down, because on the phone, the doctors were on the phone with her, and my aunt was hyperventilating and stuff that, and like trying to rip her oxygen mask off. So she was just trying to figure out what was going, like how to
Remedy the situation, just fix everything.
And then I guess a couple hours later, they called my sister and told her that my aunt had passed.
Wow.
So my sister tells me this while I'm on, I'm literally driving to Empire State Plaza to take the bar. And under any other circumstance, I would have something like that, especially like losing people, it doesn't matter how close.
It derails you.
Yeah, it just messes you up. Yeah. But earlier in that week, I called you. And I was freaking out. You remember?
And I was at a graduation, a class reunion party, and you called me. And I just looked at the phone, and I'm like, something's up. It was just a weird time for the call to come in. I'm like, something's up. So I told the people, I was like, I gotta step off for a minute. I picked up, and you were freaking out.
I know. I was like, oh, no, no, no. Like, I don't, like, I know I shouldn't be freaking out, but, dude, I don't know. Like,
you just had a moment. Yeah. You really did. You just had a moment. That's it.
And I was trying to, I needed someone to help refocus me. And oddly enough, you had said some, like, you would give me a whole bunch of different solutions to try and, like, you know, kind of, like, regroup.
Yeah.
Help me regroup. Meditation was one of them. So the Headspace app that Matt uses.
Yeah.
And there's also, like, a mindfulness app. I think I like Headspace a little better, even though it costs money, or it costs more. Headspace, like, a lot of the sessions, they can be 5 or 10 minute sessions.
Yeah.
Or 15, I think. Either way. Some of them talked about how you're not trying to really control your thoughts, you're trying to redirect them.
Yeah.
So you can let them in, and you can think about them for a second, but then you figure out how to redirect them, and they gave you ways to help redirect those thoughts, whether that's focusing on your breath for a little bit, feeling your breaths from your head to every part of your body all the way down, letting the thoughts in and take over for a little while, letting your mind wander, and then coming back to those breaths. Yeah. And I remember doing that whole first day while I was taking the bar.
Wow.
Because those thoughts crept in. I was like, you know, I'd be focusing on, you know, typing an essay about secure transactions, and then all of a sudden it's like, you're Onstead. And I'm like, and it, like, you know, stopped me for a brief second, and I redirected my thoughts, and I started, you know, I got back to it. And this was the first time I finished basically every essay. I never finished an essay before, ever in the essay section before, and I finished it all, because I was like, I have to do this. I have to get this done. And, like, I don't want to be insensitive, I guess, to myself, but, you know, my aunt passed and there was nothing I could do about the situation, right. But I could do something about getting my license.
Exactly.
So I did what I could. I was meditating while I was taking that bar exam, and I figured it out, and I finished that test, and then I cried when I got home.
Yeah.
Or I got to my car.
Yeah. You know, and I remember that the day when we had the conversation, after we talked, I was thinking about you, so I called you back, I think, like, 3 hours later, and you were a completely different person. You were a completely different person. I remember when you picked up the phone, just the energy coming off, I looked at my phone to see if I dialed the right number. You remember I told you that?
Yeah.
Because I was in the car driving back. Oh. And that was important, the way that you were able to make that shift in your mind. And you were able to not compartmentalize things, but you were able to organize them in, like, a way of priority. And like what you said, control what you could control and deal with what you couldn't later.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember after meditating, it seemed like you had nailed that. And you weren't being cold. You weren't being, like, insensitive to the situation. You were just like, this is where I'm at now. This was what needs to get done. And this is what I'm going to focus on. And you just fucking nailed it. And, you know, I just remember that. I was laughing on the phone because I'm like, I can't believe I'm talking to the same person that I talked to 3 hours ago. But it's important for people to realize that sometimes all it is just taking a minute to step out of your situation, stop thinking that you're going to be able to figure it out right then and then, and just take a minute, take a breath, meditate, reset, and then go back at it again. And the good thing with you is that a lot of people in those situations, even myself sometimes, you shut down, you know, but you didn't. You just, like, what's going on here? You figured out what was going on. You did the meditating and you're like, all right, I'm back on track. This is what I need to do. And you did it and you kicked ass. And it was awesome to see that, you know. Not a lot of people can do that. It's hard. It really is.
I think over these past few years, I've kind of really nailed failure.
Yeah. And that's a huge accomplishment to do, and to do it at such a young age, that gives you an advantage, because most people are terrified of failure. I'm realizing it now with comedy, getting back into it and being on the stage again,
mm-hmm.
is that if I go to an open mic, I don't care. It doesn't matter what I do in there. You know, I'll go in with a certain agenda of what I'm trying to accomplish for that night,
mm-hmm.
be it get on the stage, memorizing the jokes, trying out a few jokes. it's not until like there's people in the audience that I care about where I started getting like, oh shit, you know what I mean? And yeah, even then it just lasts until I step on the stage, then it kicks over to autopilot, you know?
Oh yeah.
I believe that you're either prepared or you're not prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you'll ever be prepared for failure, but I think if you're not prepared, then the likelihood of you failing go up tremendously.
Yeah.
And because of that failure, you don't ever end up coming back not prepared again, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And then there's a situation where you do everything right, you're 100% prepared, and you just fucking fail. Right? There's those situations, too, that people don't talk about. And I think those, the people that push through those situations and get to that next level after that failure, are the ones that we talk about. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they're the ones that influence the most. And some people just don't have it in them to push past that barrier, you know? And it's kind of sad it's sad to see that, you know?
It definitely is. I don't know, I guess I'd say that over these last, I don't know, few years, I feel like I've failed and been rejected from everything I've wanted.
Yeah.
Not everything I've gone after.
Yeah.
Some things I went after I didn't care about and I got them. I was like, oh, okay. But everything I've wanted and everything I've been like passionate about,
I understand,
and like really like to my like I cared about, everything I cared about, I did not get.
Yeah.
And it, you know, sometimes you could just be like, well, shit, like I, okay, maybe it's not for me. Maybe there's something wrong with me. Maybe, you know, you like all these thoughts to go through your head.
That's so true.
You, like all the negative thoughts go through your head, and it gets to a point where you gotta tell yourself, stop feeling sorry for yourself.
So true.
People don't get what they want all the time.
It's so true.
All the time. But every failure is that much closer to
success.
Every no is that much closer to a yes.
Yeah.
Bars. Sorry. I'm sorry. I had to do it.
So, fair enough. Because it's true, though. It sounds so corny, but it's 100% true. I used to have to like trip myself when I was doing our cold calls, and every time like someone would hang up on me or someone wouldn't want to engage with me, I'm like, all right, that's another no, that's one step closer to a yes. And
mm-hmm.
it was, I mean, it's kind of brainwash yourself, but
that's
just the truth.
Because you can I don't know, I feel like I've doubted myself in everything in life.
Mm-hmm.
That now I'm just like, well, what if I don't, what if this no is really so I can have something better later on.
I think so.
What if, you know, I do happen to get what I want, I just got to work a little harder or a little smarter for it. Or what is this propelling me towards? I got a no over here, but now I don't have an excuse to go not do this other thing that I've been wanting to do.
Yeah.
So everything has been it's like that pity party. It gets old and it's unproductive.
That's true.
And honestly, sometimes it feels good to feel sorry for yourself.
It really does. It's so true, though. I'm serious. Like, sometimes you just want to step and you just want to jump into that pit. And anybody that's going to say something positive to you, you want to tell them to shut the fuck up.
Yeah, you're like, no. Like,
no,
I didn't come here so you can tell me, like, no.
Don't
I didn't
make me feel better. You know what I mean?
No, I'm trying to soak.
It's true. It's true. And you know, it's really, like, I have the best support system, you know? The absolute best support system.
You sure?
Because
I think I got the best support
system. And what I mean is, like, yeah, like, if we have anything that's really bothering us, and we do this, we kind of, like, take the temperature. You good? You're like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Before we just like emotionally like dump on each other, you know?
Yeah.
But you can call somebody, you know, if you really, really need them to pick up, like at the reunion, they're going to pick up and they're going to talk to you. And sometimes, I don't think I spent more than 5 minutes talking to you on that conversation that we had.
Yeah, no.
But that 5 minutes was really enough to make an impact to help you out in that situation.
That was what I needed. I didn't need somebody to pep me up and give me a pep talk for like 30 minutes. No, I just needed you to say, you know what to do.
That's it.
Now get it done.
And sometimes you just need an outside voice that you trust
mm-hmm.
to say that to you. And having a support system like that, like when I was dealing with the situation with my brother when he passed,
mm-hmm.
Kino, I remember you were, you know me, I'm the type of person, instead of going out and wanting to be around people, I want to be by myself, like, mm-hmm. recluse a little bit. And you were like, look, it's cool to recluse. It's cool. But you were just staying there to make sure that I was good. And you would check in and make sure I didn't fall into like a deep, deep state of depression.
Yeah.
And so you still let me grieve. Yeah, but you still let me do my grieving. You still gave me that space. But you just, you knew enough to do it enough, you know?
I don't want
to
be like helicopter friend, but I was also like,
yeah, this is, this
as
is,
much as I can help you with, yeah. I'm going to try and do, because
that's all you can do.
I can't imagine,
yeah.
you know?
That's
and
true.
You shouldn't have to, you're the type of person, like, there are very few people in my life who will literally go through, try, they will try to go through things alone.
Yeah,
because,
exactly.
you know, yeah, you're strong enough to, but it doesn't mean you have to.
It's
so,
100% true.
Like,
it's
let people be there
true.
For you, and
yeah.
I will knuckle my way
and
in
that's
there.
What you were doing. You were knuckling your way in, and I'm like, oh, she's not stopping.
Yeah.
But that's
I'm
what
like,
you need.
I'm here.
You need
I love
those
you.
Yeah, that's it. That's what it's about. No, that's really what it's about. Because, you know, even though you don't think you want that, you need that. You know,
yeah.
you really need that, and just to have that. Or, the other day I had a question, I'm like, oh, I'm really struggling with this. And sometimes it might seem like it's something real simple or so basic.
Those
but you're just
you
not
overthink.
Yeah, you're like, yeah, you're just overthinking this. I'm like, all right, cool. That was it. But sometimes you need that from someone that's, like you said, someone that you respect, that you know isn't going to tell you the answer that you want. They're going to
mm-hmm.
give you the answer that you need. That alone is hard to find, you know what I mean? Because everyone
yeah.
wants to be comfortable being in your good graces, but to be like, not Milt, this is what's going on, or Milt, you're messing up, or that's hard to do.
Yeah.
It's hard to do it. So to do it so consistently is dope.
Definitely.
So
definitely.
I also saw that your woman's self-defense went absolutely that went really good. You got a really good turnout.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised at all. But tell me more about that.
It's crazy. I never wanted to be a teacher. I say this
yeah.
all the time. And it's funny because I used to be a tennis coach. But whenever people were like, oh, you know, you should teach a women's class, or because people have been saying this since Blue Belt, and I'm like, I don't know enough, or at least
that's
I don't
crazy
feel like
that
I know
you
enough.
Say that.
I didn't, because there's so much that I have yet to learn and put together, and when I started as a white belt, I kept that mentality because I always wanted to learn,
yeah,
and always wanted to get smashed by upper belts, so. Like I said before, I still feel sometimes like a white belt. I still
yeah.
feel like a blue belt because there's so much, like there are these little details that come and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, right.
But now people want me to impart my quote unquote wisdom.
It's true. It's true.
You know, it feels weird that people want to come to me and ask me for help because I'm always going to people. So I'm like, if I'm always going to people, you know, but then it's funny because I look at stuff or people ask me stuff and I'm like, oh, I actually don't know the answer to that. I know that really well.
Yeah.
So maybe that's also a confidence thing that I still have to grow into. But this women's self-defense class, I had so much fun. I never thought I would have that much fun teaching.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were.
And you're a natural at it too. That's the crazy part about it. You know, you're so natural at it.
Yeah.
So how did it go? How many people showed up? And
13 women showed up. 13 or 14 women
wow.
showed up. Yeah, and I was expecting like 3 or 4.
Especially in this area, it's so hard to get women on that map.
Yeah, there were women I'd never seen before.
Yeah.
And it was just like surreal to have them laughing and doing these moves and like really going for these moves on each other. And just feeling like in a space where they could learn, they didn't have to question anything, and that they could leave this place confident knowing that if there was at least one thing they took with them, they could at least figure out how to protect themselves should the need ever arise.
That's crazy.
And, you know, there's nothing that's like an overnight fix
no,
to
it's not.
Whatever,
it's not.
But, you know, at the end of the... Nick helped me out. Nick Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best training partners ever.
Oh, yeah.
He... and such a supportive friend. Like,
yeah.
he's one of the best friends you can ever
yeah.
have. He
That's
was like,
guy.
You should tell them, pick one move that they really like, that they really thought they did well, and just drill that for the last 5 minutes of class, and then take that home with them and, you know, do it on, you know, whoever they can do it on. Like, you know, like...
Just like we do with jiu-jitsu. Yeah. Anyone that you can grab. Hey, what's your song?
And it was funny to see, like, everybody had different things they liked. And, but they had a fun time. And after, they were like, yeah, we want to do this weekly. We want a class. Some of them are even going to start coming to the regular class.
Wow.
Yeah, just
that's
mom.
A huge... What?
She said she wanted to start coming Fridays.
Wow, that's huge. That's huge.
Kat said she wanted to start coming more. Arj is going to start getting into it. There were just a lot of women who were like, they felt empowered. Christina started up again. So it was nice.
It is.
It was really nice. And it definitely made me want to keep doing it because I felt like I...
Made a difference and there was an impact.
And I helped. It's such an important thing that women learn how to protect themselves, because I say it over and over and over again, but because everybody should be nice, every man should learn how to keep their hands to them damn selves, like they should,
but that's not how it
works. That's not reality.
Yeah,
people are going to try you, they're going to push those barriers, especially if they've pushed it before and gotten away with it. So you need to learn how to choke somebody out, you need to learn how to break a limb or two.
Tell me that story. Didn't you tell me that story that you just created with that guy, like something about him choking him out, right?
There have been a couple guys I've told that, because people literally, like, when you're by yourself, people try you.
It's unreal that you guys run into these type of problems as often as you do. When you told me this story, you're not even joking, right? Like, you're like, no.
No, there have been a couple times. One time this guy grabbed me because I was going back and forth with this one guy at a conference. We weren't, like, it was just funny banter. I was being sarcastic. I wasn't getting mad, but he was getting, like, kind of disrespectful. And... another guy came in and he was like, just, you know, he put his hand on me to like calm me down. I'm talking to you right here, but I was kind of like smiling about it because I was just like, really, dude? He put his hand on me and he was like, you know, you should just, and I didn't even listen to him. I looked down at my wrist and I was like, why are you touching me? Your hand is on my arm. Remove it, please. And he's like, oh, you know, you're good. I was just trying to help the situation. I was like, yeah, there are different ways. You don't need to touch me.
Oh, wow.
Like, because I didn't know this man.
No, you're 100% right.
And you could have been really nice, but, like, that's how it starts. Somebody's being really nice. Like, you can get people's attention without touching them. Yeah. You can say, excuse me. Right. I would have responded to that.
Yeah.
But another time, a guy was following me back to my car. And I was wearing heels that day, which was really stupid, because I was interviewing for a job, and he just kept following me, and I was like, dude, I don't really want to be bothered, I'm just trying to go home, and I walked past my car, because I was still uncomfortable, and he wouldn't stop pressing it, trying to, like, get my number and stuff, and I was like, dude, I choke my friends out for fun, can you please leave me alone?
Yo, you told me that story, I lost it. You were so mad at the time too, you were hot.
I did this thing, my friend Amy and I, we came up with this. Okay, guys like making, some guys, not all guys, I don't want to speak generally, some guys like making women feel uncomfortable. How can we do that in return? So like, we just try to figure out how to say the most outlandish stuff ever. So I literally figure out in my head, like, what can I say to make this person feel really uncomfortable? And you got to say it with, like, you got to, like, make your eyes a little big. And you got to put a little smirk on your face to make yourself look crazy. And people are just like, oh, I don't know if I want to mess with her. But you really, like, it's a game, kind of, because... You're trying to make me feel uncomfortable. Yeah, I bet you I'll win this game.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
I bet you. And I feel confident enough to protect myself. So it's you're really not gonna win.
Yeah, it's a wrap. This isn't going anywhere. It's a wrap.
But that's what jiu-jitsu gives to you. If I didn't have, you know, like maybe I would have, but I didn't feel this confident walking around when I didn't feel like I could protect myself if somebody decided to, you know, attack me or make me feel uncomfortable. Now I feel like I can get away with a lot of stuff because...
You know exactly what you're capable of doing if things go to...
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So...
And you see, the other thing, like, when fake confidence is cool, you know, until you get tested, and then people can, you know, they can smell the fear on you.
Yeah.
But when you have real confidence, they can also smell the real confidence on you too. There's just a different look in your eye. There's a different way. It's just different, you know?
Yeah. People and, usually don't, unless they're like unhinged, people usually don't try confident people.
No, they
don't.
Do not.
They usually steer clear not. From them because yeah. it brings out their own insecurities.
It's true. It's 100% true.
That's why a lot of people can't stick around Matt for a long time yeah. because Matt is super confident about himself and mm-hmm. he knows what he's capable of
yep.
in life.
Yeah.
So people that's off-putting to some people.
It is.
It's contagious. So like if you're looking for that and you want to be around that, you're going to gravitate towards it. Oh, but if yeah. you're not about accountability, if you're not about trying to better yourself each and every day and, you know, work on those flaws that you have, you're not going to want to be around it.
Right.
Because it's gonna bring yours to light. It's going to call you out on yours. And if you're not ready for change, if you don't want to change, then
and it's not happening.
It's going to make you uncomfortable.
Forget about it 100%. So other good things that are going on with you, what's good with you is the audition you did recently. You think I'm disappointed you don't already have like a little talk? I got stuff I want to talk about. How was the audition? That was huge that you even stepped up to do that and push yourself to that comfort. Just say, okay, we're going to do something super uncomfortable and also be judged by it, you know?
Dude, part of me wants to talk about why, like, what pushed me into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, tell me.
Okay.
I told you, we going in. You said we go, tell me what did it.
Okay. He's laughing because he can see my face and knows how uncomfortable I am.
Oh, you're super uncomfortable.
Because he knows I'm going to talk about it.
I know you're going to talk. What did you say? You said, what's the next
thing?
Like,
can I?
All right.
Let's push.
Oh, Lord. Let's push.
Lot of mercy.
Talk to me. The people want to know.
Oh, do they? Okay, y'all. I can't even look the mic in the eyes. That's how bad this is. I'm looking at the ceiling right now. Oh, I swear I'm gonna get there. Just be patient with me. I think you're gonna have to edit this out.
No, I'm not editing nothing. This is real talk. Oh my
Lord.
God.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, she has her eyes covered okay. right now.
Don't expose me more. Alright. I'm only laughing because another person that I'm about to talk about is going to hear it. I'm not saying no names. So. Alright, y'all. So, you know, I was talking about rejection and all that stuff.
Earlier, yeah.
Whew. Alright, so. My whole, the theme of my life is personal growth because, you know, when do you really stop? I've never, ever, ever told somebody that I like them to their face.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, let me do this. But, you know, I kind of like punked out and then I went back and then I punked out again and I went back. And I was like, yeah, thinking back, I was such a dumbass. But, you know, whatever. I'm not used to it. Yeah. I there are a lot of things I fear. Emotions are one of them.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that agree with you.
Just yeah, I'm open about a lot of things, but like there are certain things I'm just not vulnerable about. And it's usually like when I feel a certain way about somebody, I'm not vulnerable about stuff like that. But getting to a point where you can be, I was talking to my friend Kenny about it. He's another person that I go to a lot for, especially when I have like issues with guys. He's somebody I'll bounce stuff off of because he can always give me like an objective male point of view, because right. ladies, stop going to your girlfriends about guys. If you want a guy's perspective, if you want a good perspective, I mean, everybody's different.
It's true.
And they're gonna tell you that.
Yeah.
But if you want a better perspective about a male, go to a male.
Right.
And that's it. And it's the same for guys. Go to a woman about a woman. Sometimes the same sex can give you a good perspective, but more often than not, you'll find a better perspective from somebody
of the opposite sex you're trying to communicate.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
So I was bouncing a lot of things off of him, and he's like, you know, you really just like gotta go for it. He's like, you there was this book he was reading, I can't remember it right now, I'll be sure to like look it up and tell you later, but it was about being vulnerable and having to look at yourself through like that kind of lens. Like, why have you never been vulnerable before? What, like, do you like this person? Do you like the idea of this person? Do you like what this person presents to you, mm-hmm. and not necessarily that person? Do you like what, like, if somebody else were giving you the same things, would you like that person too? Like, you, there are just certain questions that I had never asked myself before that I was, and I was, like, quite certain I'd like this person, you know, like, cool, like, we'd spend a lot of time together, whatever.
Of course, yeah.
But I told them, and then I got in my car and left. I didn't give them time to answer. I just got in my car and left.
Yeah, that's key. You gotta give time to answer.
No, you sure do. But I don't know if I could have taken the answer to my face, because I can't hide my facial expressions. Yeah. So I think it was just better overall. Like, one day I'll get to that point. I'm still growing. Still an adolescent when it comes to, like, you know,
yeah, that emotional part. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. But it was a huge step when you did that. Like, to come out and do that and actually face that was huge.
Yeah, and I know you guys are probably like, he asked you a question about acting. Why are you talking about relationships? I swear I'll get there. it's all leading up. I just got to give you the backstory. So, got in the car, left. Then I sent a message like apologizing to that person. Like, say, you know, I'm really sorry. I'm not used to doing stuff like this, whatever. But, you know, answer when you're ready. Don't feel pressure. Cool. Then I didn't get a like response the next day. I didn't really get one till like a day and a half later, something like that. And they told me they didn't feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And like, of course, like, yeah, that shit hurts. And like, it felt really bad. I'm not gonna lie to you. It sucks not having somebody like return your feelings. Yeah. But when I tell you, I've never had somebody return the same feelings for me at the time that I liked them. Like, never. Not once. 27.
Yeah.
Not once.
But it's after or before, or
they either like you before, they just want to be your friend, they like you, they figure out that they liked you later on, and you're like, well, what changed? Like, nothing changed.
I'm over you now.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I don't go backwards.
Yeah.
And that person could be like a really good person. Cool.
It's true.
Or, you know, you both kind of thought you liked each other, but nobody ever said anything, and then you guys tell each other later, and you're like, damn
son.
Something could have happened. It's true. But you're like, well, sorry, we both over here.
Yeah, exactly. It's true. That's so funny. Like, that's true. That's how it works sometimes.
Yeah, but when I tell you that's the story of my life, that's literally the story of my life. Like, I think my only real relationship was in high school, and it was 3 months.
Oh.
And I had, like, a situationship in college, but it never worked out. And then, like, he said he loved me after he got into a relationship 3 years later. And said if he doesn't marry me by the time he's, like, 30, then, you know, he's an idiot or some dumb shit like that. But I was like, and then I found out a week later, I was like, wait, are you in a relationship with somebody else? He's like, yeah, I thought I told you. That's not a detail you miss, bruh. That's not something you forget. You didn't say it, because
no.
I wouldn't forget that.
No.
But I digress.
Yeah.
So, got rejected, didn't feel good, but this time, I always ask myself, I'm like, well, what was wrong with me? Why don't these guys like me? What am I doing wrong? Like, I always internalize, and I think that's just because I need an answer, so I can give myself an answer and say, well, okay, then I'll just make myself better in this aspect, or I'll do this
saying.
Better. Like,
right,
you know,
right,
it's always something for me to work on, when necessarily, like, I didn't really, like, there wasn't really anything for me to work on.
It's true.
Because it wasn't a me problem. It was a we're not for each other problem.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just, they like oranges and I'm a fucking diamond.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I'm embracing this confidence thing. I'm embracing it.
I guess so.
Okay. So anyway. I'm sorry.
No, I didn't.
So this time I didn't do that. Like, it tried to flutter across my mind, but this time I was like, all right, so how can I just grow in life? What else can I focus my attention to? It's not going to be anything bad. I'm not going to sit and eat ice cream. I'm not going to feel sorry for myself. Like, I'm not going to just be like, oh, fuck the world. My heart's cold. I got an icebox where my heart used to be. Omarion. No. and bring it back, y'all. So anyway, I was like, all right. I called my dad. I was like, you still have friends that are in the entertainment industry? Can you put me in touch with any of them? Because he's been telling me, like, you know, if you want to act, if you want to sing, I can help you with that.
Oh, wow.
Before, he wasn't trying to, because my sister was like, you would have never went for your law degree. And, you know, they won't do
That's a funny detail. That's actually really funny.
Yeah, he left this out until after I graduated from law school. He's like, you still want to do this?
That's actually kind of dope, though.
Oh, thanks, Dad. Thanks for telling me this years later. Yeah, I wanted to be hazed in law school. Like, yeah, I wanted to do that. I wanted to fail the bar a couple times. No, I wanted to go through all this before you told me I had an option to go do this other stuff. Thanks, Dad!
It's true. It's so much, though.
But you know, his heart was in the right place. Like,
yeah, he's trying to set you up for good.
My parents legitimately always wanted the best for me and always tried to make it so.
Yeah.
And I love them and I appreciate them for that. And you know, I have my JD and my master's degree.
Exactly.
I'll have my license soon. Like, there are limitless options. I have limitless options because of the path that they put me on and because of the values they instilled in me.
And it's really good that you appreciate that.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize what, and parents are, they play such a huge role in making sure that you're set up properly. Cause if they, I think they can really, even with the name that they give you, they can really set you up for success and they can really set you up for failure, you know? So it's good that they do that and you recognize that.
Oh yeah. So he was like, yeah, I'll call you back in a little bit, or I'll call you in a little bit. Literally 10 minutes later, he's like, he sent me the number of a casting director in LA.
Oh my
and
gosh.
He's like, call this person right now. So I call them and I got on the phone with this casting director, and he's super, like, he's worked on things, he worked on the Martin Lawrence show. He's worked with people like Tiffany Haddish, Martin Lawrence, like big name people. I think he's working on The Matrix 4 next.
That's huge.
And he's telling me all this stuff that if I'm serious about it, the steps that I need to take. So I've started, you know, little by little, trying to set myself up so that I can, you know, dip out to LA in like a year or so.
Yes.
But I decided, there was this Facebook ad for Arts International. And I was like, whatever, let's go do it. I've been doing things that, you know, that are scary. Like,
it's nothing now.
It's just another hurdle. Like, it's just another thing. And slowly, like, my confidence started becoming more and more. I sat in that room, and you have to audition in front of the whole room. Everybody has to audition in front of the whole room. And I had been, like, on stage before in front of, like, lots of people, but I don't usually sing by myself in front of lots of people.
Yeah, you with your singing, yeah.
Bro.
Yeah.
My voice starts shaking, my cheek starts twitching, mm-hmm. like, it's bad. But I got up there, I acted out the little blurb that they gave us, and I sang in front of these people, and I got compliments, and I got the call back.
You got the call back?
I got the call back that
How
night.
How exciting was that? You got it that night?
Yeah, 11:37. Wow. I went to bed, but, because I was just like, I don't really care. I mean, I did care. You called me out for that. Everybody says that, but you really got the call back.
Yeah.
But
you know why I called you out on that? I feel bad. I call you out on that.
Because I do the same thing. You call me out all the time. I don't think you feel bad.
That one I did. No, that you're right. I don't feel that bad. I don't feel that bad. Because you know why? It's because I've heard you sing before, and mm-hmm. I know that you have a beautiful voice and you're very talented. So when people say, like, with me, I'll say that too. I'm like, I don't care. Comics. Man, whatever. Yeah. But it's inside of you is like, it's disqualifying it because it's saying, well, it's not as important what they think is, like, bullshit you tell yourself, you know? And it's like, there's certain people out there that do have to tell themselves that to get, you know, through life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But there's other people that don't, and you're one of them, you know? Mm-hmm. So when you catch, it's like, no, stop. Because when you get that call back, you want to enjoy that shit 100% as opposed to being like, whatever. Don't even set yourself up for it, because you know what's going to happen, you know what I mean? And if you don't, it didn't happen that time, it'll happen again.
Yeah.
But just a lot of people just disqualify that portion of it, and it's such a part of the journey, you know? Like, The Last Comic Standing, I want to do that. And there's some good comedians there, like some really, really talented guys.
You better tell me the date.
Oh, I definitely, you have to bring your own, basically bring your own audience. So you will definitely.
You'll bring an MSBJ yeah. day?
Yeah, I already know. It's a wrap. It's a wrap. But I'm nervous because I don't want all those people to come and see me and then I don't take down first. But that's just, that's head trash because they're not coming to see me when the competition.
They're coming for you.
No, they're coming
to
see
me. You know he will.
Yeah, of course I'm going to win.
You go, dang it.
But, but that's part of the head trash that prevents you from saying, okay, instead of doing it this month, I'm doing it next month. Or you push it off and then you're like, oh, well, when you do win it, then you feel like an idiot inside because you're like, well, you doubted yourself.
Yeah.
Take that doubt completely out of it. So when you hit it, you're like, boom, well, this is happening because I'm that good. Now we're on to the next thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just enjoy it. Savor it. So much about the journey,
oh, yeah.
you know? And think about it now. You're looking back, all that buildup. Because I remember it was a long audition because you sent me a picture of the, like, audition stuff.
Yeah.
And then hours later,
like
you went up.
Six.
Yeah. And then you went up on
like 8:45. Yeah.
So all those nerves, all that time, just it's just settled in.
It was funny because it actually started getting better over time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because I was like, you shouldn't compare yourself, but I was like, there are people here with, you know, I feel like I got a little bit more talent. But they got up there and they were confident enough to get up there,
thing.
So why can't I?
It's true. That's what you look at. That's what you look at.
So
it's true.
That there's like a meme that floats around and every so often you see it and it's like there are people out there who are less talented than you, not as funny as you, not as pretty as you, but they are going to get what they want in life because they are more confident than you.
It's
100%. Period.
Yeah, it's 100%.
And it's it.
Yeah. And some of them really shouldn't be more confident than you or me, but they are.
But their parents were like, you are smart.
Yeah.
You are God. You
it's
is
so,
important.
And you know what, though? We laugh about that, but I'm going to tell you something. I'm being real serious about it. I feel like, and I've been talking about this a lot lately, especially after that episode with Dan. I feel like one of the biggest advantages that we say white privilege, but is the fact that a lot more so likely the white families, they mm-hmm. have more structure to them, and they have more of that support system where you do have the mom saying, you are this, you're that, you're a brilliant, you're this, you're going to be that great, or you know what I mean? They're just pushing
there's less, no, you're not going to do that.
Oh,
or
yeah, there's,
you can't do that. Or they're not as like jokey, like, oh, you suck. There are people, they are embracing the hell out of their kids that sound like a screeching canary.
Hell yeah.
And you have people who are like, you ain't funny. Like, you know.
100%
it's,
right.
Maybe it's a joke, but that sticks with people.
It does stick with people.
Or when you call somebody fat, joking, when that person's not necessarily fat, or even if they are, that sticks with them. Especially when you say it to a kid, kids are so impressionable. So the things you say to them when they are young, they are going to... they're going to internalize.
Yeah, they do more of a better job of building their kids up, I feel. And they support that build up, you know, and they show up to these events that they are. And they just, that support is different when you have your parent there saying you're doing good. Even if you're not doing good, if mom or dad is saying you're doing good and they're spending enough time or they're making the time
mm-hmm.
to come and see you, you're going to perform differently. Because honestly, those are the only two people in the audience you're trying to impress,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And it's crazy because, like, when you have confidence instilled in you at a young age.
Oh, man.
When you hear the doubts and stuff, you're like, oh, they're not talking about me. Or it rolls right off your shoulder.
It does.
But when you've heard more negative things, or at least...
it sticks
when
to you.
When you heard those negative things as a kid, because I hear a lot of positive things about me today, but it's so easy for me to
believe I noticed
those
that
negative
way.
Things.
Yeah, yep, it's true.
Than to believe you're just saying that because you want to be nice and you know that I'm thinking in this way.
Exactly.
But why? And it's not because, like, I didn't have parents that, you know, instilled that confidence in me, but they were divorced. So when your parents are divorced, there is a little bit more room for other people to wiggle their way in there.
That's 100%.
And, like, influence with their own values.
Yeah.
Because you don't necessarily have both your parents around all the time.
That's right.
So it's like there's a process of rewiring your brain.
Hell
and I'm figuring mm-hmm. out how to I'm getting better at that.
I'm doing the same thing.
Like,
I'm doing the same exact thing.
This audition helped with that. I sing like 10 times better now after doing that audition because I'm not in my head.
Yeah.
I'm just singing and I'm like, no, I can hit that. And then I hit it.
Yeah. It's, your voice is incredible. Like, that's when I hear you, like, you hear people talk doubt, you know, and sometimes I hear you talk, like you say, you know, my voice starts to quiver, my lips starts to shake and stuff. But to hear your voice, like, you would never think that you are reacting to that sound that way because it sounds the way it sounds. You know what I mean? But it's in your head.
Yeah.
It's all of it is in your head, you know? Yeah. Even when I'm on stage and I'm doing some of the jokes that, like, are pushing the element towards acting, and we'll talk about that too, but some of it, I think some of the best comedians in the world are the ones that do performances, the stand-up comedians. They don't just stand there or they don't just sit down in a stool. The comedians that really impress me are the ones that when they leave, they have a sweat towel that's drenched in sweat, you know?
Yeah.
Or they're covered in sweat because they were just so physical on the stage.
But for some reason, Chappelle, I never see that man sweat a day in his life, but he's jumping and running.
He's ice. Like, I think ice starts to pump through his veins when he goes on that stage. He just goes into a different place.
Yeah.
He goes into a completely different place where there's no nerves.
My favorite comedian.
He's phenomenal. He's absolutely phenomenal.
I love him. And what
but he's performing. He's performing.
Yeah, he is.
The whole time he's up there, he's performing. And when you're performing sometimes, you kind of lose yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I start to get uncomfortable, when I start to lose myself, because I'm like, oh, what if they don't get it, you know? And part of losing yourself is not giving a fuck about what the audience says. It's like committing, just riding it through.
And we went to his graduation show. He killed it. Absolutely killed it.
Oh, you're talking about me?
I'm talking about you. Yeah, I'm talking about you. People were like, yo, Milton was funny as hell.
I appreciate it.
Like, we still talk about it.
I appreciate it.
So,
that means a lot.
You have no reason to doubt yourself on that stage.
But that's what I'm saying. So, even then, listening to what you're saying now, it's true. And I got a lot of compliments from it. But you feel inside when you're on that stage, like, oh, man, I'm not comfortable up here. All that, I took too long to deliver that line. It's just bullshit that goes through your head. We call it head trash, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the confidence to really be able to grab that and put it in line, you're screwed. And it's not just going to affect the way you are on stage or when you're singing. It's going to affect everything you do out through life. When you get impacted by a raise or that you didn't get or someone else gets promoted, all of that stuff. And I feel like I said, I wish family structure is in especially even in my family, but typically in Black families, it's just not as strong. Like, I was telling my brother, because we have a very talented nephew, Devontae, and he's just raw talent. The kid is just raw talent.
Mm.
And the other people, the white kids that are keeping up with him, their parents put them through all kinds of extracurricular training. They have a personal coach. They have a gym built. And it's different. What? Imagine if Devontae had that. Like, what?
Bro.
You know what I mean? And
they wouldn't touch him.
They wouldn't touch him, but he doesn't. So there is a chance of him touching. And it's just kind of sad because there's certain values that we see in other cultures that I wish other cultures would adapt and strengthen themselves as a culture overall, you know? And granted, a lot of it in our community is because, you know, we kind of been set in a disadvantage and the amount of Black males that are arrested, all that impacts it, and a lot of it, I believe, is intentional.
And
that's why it's intentional, because of the impact that it has. But I still cannot go unrecognized, you know, the value of just having that mom or that father and that support unit that's just pushing you to feel, give you that confidence that maybe you shouldn't have, you know?
I think one of the things that would help, so like you and Will, I don't know if either of you are from the hood, but you don't live there now.
No, hell no.
But those kids who like have that raw talent and who are disadvantaged, let's say they saw people like you and Will, as opposed to just the people they see on the TV or the rappers they hear on whatever music station.
That's true.
Like, they don't see enough of blue collar, white collar Black men. They see athletes, they see musicians, they see Instagram personalities, YouTube personalities, whatever. And maybe they see the occasional mogul like Diddy, Jay-Z, whoever.
Very occasional.
Or just the actors. You know, Will Smith is a really good example of somebody you'd want to follow, but again, he's part of like the anomalies.
It's true.
And not to say you can't have more kids who fall under that, but you're not going to have every single one fall under that. And when they don't see anything else as a target, and they only see, you don't, they only see like the top people, they don't have anything else to reach for. So they're just going to revert to the examples they have in their environment.
Which is sad. And that's why you get these gangs, and you get, it's 100%.
And it's not every single one of them. I even saw kids I went to school, like suburban school with, who were from the suburbs, go back to the hood they weren't even from.
Yeah.
Because they were trying to be this image of what they thought it was to be Black.
And be successful.
It's bullshit. You know, I've been called a white Black person from white people. I've been called a white Black person from black people.
Yeah.
Like,
it's true. You get it from both ways.
But now I just don't give a shit. And because so I'm just like, okay, I'm still like, what you say is a little consequence to it's me so because true. I'm going to actualize all my goals.
It's so true.
And what you say isn't going to get in the way nor help me get them, so it doesn't matter.
You're 100% right.
And that's part of the whole confidence thing, too. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what color I am. Like, y'all focused on race, and that's not really the focus.
Everyone that's been super, that's been super successful, Black, Asian, white, they're not sitting there. They pay attention to very little to that bullshit.
Depends on, you have to focus,
you have to be aware of it.
What conversations are they having?
Exactly.
They're not having the same conversations.
Yeah.
They're not having the same conversations as like middle class, white, Black, whatever people.
No, they're not.
They're having completely different conversations. They have like 7 to 10 streams of income.
Yeah.
Like,
and that's what they're focused on. Not
that's
the,
it.
And
how can I grow this
look
money?
At, and you know what?
My family.
Something that this whole woke movement that's really beginning to annoy me.
#stay woke.
Yeah, this whole hashtag stay woke. It's all, yeah, it's great. But my thing is, the people that are getting woke, cool. What are you doing with that information instead of walking around saying that you're woke?
And the people, shitting on people who don't have that information.
Exactly. And then like laughing at them like they missed something that you just read 5 minutes ago or someone dropped in your lap that it's life-changing and it's shocking, but now you're just going to let that fester and you're not going to do anything with that information. A lot of it is, yeah, there's been deception and there's been unfairness and there's hate and there's ugly truths that we don't want to, fine, I get all that. And you're woke because you know that.
Yeah.
Now what? And there's nothing. And those
woke people don't even, like, they took a couple of African American studies classes in school.
That's the part that bothers me.
And that was it. Like, my dad had me, he would send me thick books that were like 500 to 1,000 pages and say, you got a week to read this. Send me a book report when you're done.
Yeah.
It'd be on like Black history. I took African American. I wanted to get an African American studies minor. So I was taking like all the classes I could in it. And I was just reading books on my own. There was a Malcolm X exhibit up in the 6th floor of the library at Syracuse. Like, I was just so immersed in African American culture because I wanted to learn the story not written by the winners.
Of course, I agree with you.
So I could spit a lot of facts. Like, I'm not gonna, but if I do, it's because I want to educate somebody.
That's
not
what
because
I'm saying.
I want to make them feel like
it's,
crap.
Exactly,
that they don't
it's
know.
The same thing here. It's like I agree with you 100%. You want to be educated, and the stuff educating yourself about that non-wokeness stuff or the wokeness or whatever stuff you want to call it. That's great to
you
have.
Just be the image of being Black power.
Yeah, just get out of here with that. Like, what are you going to do? Like, take that information and apply it to something that makes you better, that enables you to make that difference to somebody with
and
these
go back
kids
and
that
help
you're
your
talking
community.
Go back and help your community. Like, just sitting there walking around upset and pissed off because people deceived you or did whatever they did. That's if that's being woke, then I'm staying asleep for a little bit while because I got shit to do. I got bills to pay. I got dreams that I want, and there's things that I want to acquire so that I can be a positive impact and influence on people, not just walking around. But you didn't know that the cocoa butter was made by the Black man. Like, nah, bro, I'm good. you know what I mean? I laugh at that. But then there's the other side of it where...
you can't listen to what we're saying right now as a non-Black person.
Yeah, it's true.
and think that like, oh, well, see? Yeah, yeah. Like, because no, that's not... This isn't the whole... This is one, like, one small area.
Yeah, it is.
Of a huge, like, neighborhood of information and of problems that can only be resolved by everybody.
Thank you so much.
It's not just a Black problem, and that's just, it's not just a white problem, it's not just a Black and white problem, that's just a Latino problem. Like, there's no one problem, just like there's no one solution
100%.
And Yes,
I think that's why
there's
I
white
so
privilege,
frustrated.
But there's also black people, some black people, not pushing themselves because they feel like there's a foot on their neck.
Exactly.
Like,
and I ran into many of those.
Yeah, there are people like that. And then there are people who are like, well, yeah, I got hurdles, but success is my only option.
You got it.
And
yeah.
That's an example of like my mother and father. They grew up in the worst of conditions. One in the 4040 projects in Queens, South Jamaica, Queens. And then my mom in like the worst part of Arkansas. And they both had terrible lives where they just, how can I get out of this? How can I get out of this? How can I do better?
Mm-hmm.
They did better for themselves and they made it so that their children, like me and my siblings, could do better for ourselves. We didn't have the same types of hurdles to go through. Yeah, we have different hurdles, but they're not the same ones that they had to deal with.
Right.
But, you know, just because black people can move forward doesn't mean there aren't white people who make it harder for some black people to move forward.
Because there's been, in many cases, there have been white people that have helped me move forward.
Yeah, same.
And they've gone against other people, both white and black, that didn't want me to move forward.
Yep.
And if they weren't in that position, then I wouldn't be where I am today.
There are a lot of like affluent white people who've helped me.
A lot. And I think those are the ones I'm talking about, those super successful people that realize that black, white, green, yellow
doesn't matter.
And they don't even care about it. And the way that they dismiss that nonsense, I love it. I love it because a lot of the times they're for a very powerful position and they'll come in and these little middle people are just creeping and griping over this bullshit. And then this big, powerful person just steps in and says, all right, this is over. This is what we're doing. No fucking questions asked. Move forward.
Yeah.
You know, and you're sitting there like, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
The way I see it is you either disregard race and you treat everybody the same,
mm-hmm.
and you figure out, like, if you're going to help this one person who has these qualifications and somebody is not that, like, somebody who's not white has the same or better qualifications, then you better go help that other person, too.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are going to focus on race, then you have to have real, honest conversations about race in America and how we're going to move forward, we're going to, you know, bring everybody together, because... like, race is, it's an imaginary concept that was made real because of the institutions that we have.
Uh-huh.
Because in the beginning, slaves and poor white people...
worked on the same fields.
Bro, like...
worked on the same fields, yeah.
But...
the whole redneck thing is because the white man that was working the field, his neck, the back of his neck would get red because he's bending over picking over the cotton.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know those type of things, but they were just as poor as the blacks.
Which is funny because honestly, like, when it came to, I think, Donald Trump's, and I could be completely wrong, but the way I saw it was Donald Trump appealed to the low-income, blue-collar, white people that everybody forgot about. So, black people, we have programs that
mm-hmm.
help us. Like, the urban communities have programs that help. So, like... even though we have to constantly fight, and like those programs are justified, we constantly we have, you know, there may be few of them, but we have alternative avenues to get to better places
in
life.
True. Yeah.
Now the working class white people, who everybody like people think, yeah, just because you're white, you have a leg up, and maybe you do have a leg up, but in certain situations, but. These working class white people don't have a leg up.
They do not.
They're literally just like the poor blacks.
That's true.
Except they have the skin color of being white, so people disregard them because they're like, you're white.
It's
so
true.
You...
that's why all the factory workers love them so much. That's why so many factory workers love them so much.
Because he appealed to that.
He
was like, no, I'm focusing on you coal miners. I'm focusing on you farm workers. Like, I'm focusing on you because I see that you guys were forgotten. Because in a sense, they were forgotten.
They were.
They got lumped in with the... upper middle class white people and the affluent white people, because everybody thinks when you're white, you've got privilege. Yes, that may be true, but those people weren't able to use that privilege in the same way other people with money were able to use it. So somebody who's a farm worker, they're not like beating somebody out for a spot in college.
It's
because some of them didn't go past high school.
Yeah. Because they didn't have to, technically, because of the trades that they knew,
Or they're working the same field jobs as, you know, somebody else. Mm-hmm. So, like, and there's nobody's going to work for them. Nobody's saying, like, hey, you should go on Section 8 or whatever. Like, they're just providing for their families working 16, 20-hour days.
Yes, yeah.
So, I think that was a part of America that was forgotten about. So, that rage built up because they're like, nobody thinks about us. We don't have any help. We're doing this all by ourselves.
It's 100%.
And in a sense, they are. So, he fed off that. And that's why you have I can't think of the word right now, but that's why you had more racist people, because you had people for the longest time just focusing on Black people and Latino people and Asian people and LGBTQ community,
mm-hmm.
and not these lower class white people who have not been helped at all, but who have to work
just as hard, if not harder.
So I think that was a smart play on him, because there were a lot of them.
It was brilliant.
I
went to see Sinbad and they kind of joked about it, but I think a lot of people agree. No one really thought that Donald Trump was going to win the presidency. He was kind of just going for a popularity contest to be able to say why he ran.
And people think voting doesn't work.
Yeah.
Let me tell you guys. Maybe in a red state, maybe in a blue state, your vote may not matter because there's like a certain population of that state that controls the vote. But in a swing state, that vote matters. So like, don't vote for Harambe. don't write in a ballot when you have, it's either one or the other. Like, voting matters. The Electoral College is real. You can't throw away your vote. You cannot throw away your vote. Don't look at me like that. Voting, like, people thought voting... I had people, like, up and down on my Facebook talking about how they thought voting didn't matter. And maybe in New York State, because, you know, New York City votes a certain way.
Oh, yeah.
That's how the state's going. And that's why the state's blue, because everywhere else besides New York City is red.
That's true.
But there's so many people in... New York City that it offsets it, and that's why it goes blue. California is like the same way, but swing states can affect the vote like it did, and that's why Donald Trump became president. And at that time, the people were talking about, well, the popular vote, it doesn't really matter because the Electoral College went out and he had it. But that's how you know voting works, because everybody thought it was going to be Hillary. Even though it should have been Bernie, but that's a whole topic for another day. I mean, I don't know. I really think, I was talking to my friend, I really think that we need to cap, because people thought Donald Trump was going to drain the swamp. He's just from a different swamp.
Yeah.
Because I have friends who were in the military, and they had to mine for whatever you call it, look for bombs and all his stuff at Mar-a-Lago. And he's like, these people are so far removed from regular people. They live in fantasy land. They don't know what it's like to be a regular person.
It's so true.
Like, so far removed. He doesn't know what it's like to be a working class person. He can talk all this good stuff, but he doesn't really care.
The same person that came up with a brilliant campaign of who to target, it's the same exact person that's going to put together that speech to target certain people in that speech.
He sits on a gold toilet, y'all. Yeah. When's the last time you sat on a gold toilet?
How is someone like that going to be able to relate to you?
But it's
all manipulation, though, you know? Like, what he's feeling and who he's trying to appeal to. Just a while ago today, with everything going on with his impeachment, I saw now he's involved with the Black community. He's got all these people saying, Donald Trump's helping us, and he's Donald Trump shaking their hand. Listen, whenever I see a president start getting heavily involved with the Black community, I know.
Like, what you want?
What are you doing over here? Why are you talking to me?
But I think that to fix that problem, if we really want to drain the swamp, and it's just one solution, it could not work, but I think we should have a cap on, like, if you have a certain net worth.
Oh, wow.
Or if you have a certain salary, you cannot be president. Because it's been the opposite way for so long. You have to have a certain amount of campaign contributions to even get in the race.
Mm-hmm.
So what if we did the opposite? What if we were like, nah, like, we'll have this bin of money that after you get in, you can, like, pull from. But, and, you know, it's an idea that would definitely, if if ever put into play, would have to be thought out way more.
But I know what you're saying, though. No, I totally know what you're saying.
The amount of money.
Yeah.
And, like, I would be more comfortable with, like, blue-collar people who educated themselves, who decided to go run for president.
Yeah,
because they're more relatable to the
regular
person. Yeah,
and they realize, they know what the impact of something is, you know? Like, someone said something, it was a famous question, do you know what the price of milk is in the store right now? And he couldn't answer the question.
Yeah.
It's like, that's a very important question to answer, because your decisions are impacting what that price of milk will be. How with these tariffs that he's messing around with, it's a nightmare for some of these companies in the U.S. They're trying to compete with the tariffs that he's putting in place. It's having the complete opposite effect.
Mm-hmm.
But those people that he's affecting are the same people that when he was running was saying, I'm looking out for you, I'm going to help you out.
Oh, yeah.
It's not happening. But it's like I said, it's all manipulation. And
I
agree with
you. If you never had to choose between food and gas, or rent and food,
mm-hmm.
or live off ramen,
yeah,
for like 3-4 weeks, I don't want to hear what you got to say.
That's so true.
Like, you've never had to make super difficult choices. If you've never had to let a bill go so that you could pay something else,
yeah.
Like, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah,
if you've never really been in significant debt that you couldn't bankrupt yourself from,
yeah,
I don't care to hear what your opinion is.
Yeah, because your motivating factors are completely different. And that's what you see as soon as you get in there and you start running the country. Or these people like that have all this money and all this influence and all these people that they have to pay back for the influence and money that they gave them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you're playing at a different level, and the people that suffer are the middle class or the people that voted you in because they need you to make a difference. But like I said, when you get up there, it's really about keeping the rich rich and the poor poor. Because
yeah.
if you don't have the poor there, then you're not having anybody to give hope to and believe in and vote for you.
Mm-hmm.
And the rich people, you keep those guys rich because you know that's what has the power that forces people to respect you, you know?
Yep.
So it's the whole system, I think, when you look at how voting works and the fact that you're literally voting for the lesser of two evils, that's where you lose me, you know what I mean? If the system should be in place where, okay, we're voting for the better candidate, not the candidate that has the more billionaire friends, not the candidate that has the more connections.
Yeah.
It's about the person that's more qualified, best educated, and is really going to do what he says after he gets into office, because those are the things are why we're voting him in. We should have the power that if once he gets into office, if he doesn't commit or act on the promise that he made, that there should be something that we can pull in. But for some reason, those laws are so archaic that those things will never change.
Well,
and we're kind of screwed, you know? Like, voting for the lesser of two evils to run your country, that's a real thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's,
you know, I was like, I never really was interested in politics, and I feel like all the news portrays is the most negative of what's going on in the country
yeah.
or in the world. So I'm like, I really have a much more peaceful life when I, you know, take myself away from all that. But once I saw that, I was like, can we just not have
yeah.
presidency this time, or can we just get rid of everybody?
Yeah.
Can we just start over?
Because
I thought the best candidates on both sides was Bernie on the blue side,
mm-hmm.
and then Kasich
yeah.
on the red side, because he was the one that was most reasonable. Like, if we're gonna have a Republican president,
mm-hmm.
I'm an independent, so like, I don't know, like
yeah.
I feel like there are things that I like Democrat, and there are things that I like that are Republican,
mm-hmm.
but extreme on either end
yeah.
is not going to get the job done.
I don't agree.
And that's why we keep going, like, it's either Republicans control everything and it's all conservative stuff, or Democrats control everything and it's all liberal stuff. And there are more than just extreme viewpoints.
That's true.
And except maybe climate change. Climate change really needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But everything right. else, I feel like we need to come to a middle ground on, because it needs to stop being such a red versus blue battle, one party versus the other. Like, we have to find some common ground and figure out how to make, and I know it's idealistic, but like, why can't we live in a world where people work together more than they are divisive?
It's true. We work against each other. It's true.
Yeah. Cause I see so much unity, like, every day.
Mm-hmm.
between the groups of people that I'm around. And I'm like, well, why can't we have that on a large scale? What's so wrong when you start going out into, like, the New York State Legislature and Congress and other legislatures that we can't get it right?
Yeah.
Like, what's the issue here? Is it ego? Because then let's remove everybody who's got those egos, and that's getting in the way, because it's not about your ego, it's about the people.
It's so true.
It's about the citizens of the state and the citizens of the country, and how can we make it better? And everybody's not going to be pleased, but we could at least make lives, we can enhance people's lives in some way that we're not doing right now. Because it's, I don't know if it's getting worse, but it doesn't seem like it's getting that much better.
Doesn't seem like it at all.
So that's really how I feel. I just... There are some things that I like on the conservative side. There are some things that I like on the liberal side. But we got to find a common ground. And I just feel like they should get rid of the two-party thing, because I want to be able to vote in the primary without being on one side or the other.
No, you're right. You're right. We're laughing, but you're 100% right.
Yeah.
So, this always happens.
Every single time?
Every single time. Woo! Yeah. Hour and 15 minutes, just like that.
15?
And I didn't even... Hour and 15. I didn't even get a chance to get into some of the stuff I wanted to ask you, so
what was the other stuff? Like, let me just hear it, though.
Oh, no, I'm saving it for next show. Next time you're back on.
But I want to hear it.
Yeah.
How you gonna keep the people waiting?
We didn't talk anything about the jujitsu. We didn't talk about
the
property that you just flipped. We didn't talk about anything. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
yeah. There's a lot of stuff we got to talk about, plus the acting. Like,
we sure didn't. but I told the whole story about something. Yeah.
We'll get into it.
Really quickly, y'all. I'm going into acting. I'm doing the other stuff too, but I said all of that other story to say I'm pursuing something I've always been passionate about, and I'm super excited. So, like, let your failures and let your rejections push you into bettering yourself and pushing you into things that scare you but excite you at the same time, because literally it's the same feeling. Matt tells us this all the time.
That's dope.
The excitement and being scared, it's the same nervous feeling.
That's
crazy. It's just different perspectives. So, like, let those obstacles and those things in your life that you feel are negative, turn them into a positive. Let them motivate you and push you into a better direction, because literally everything can be an opportunity, and that's what I did. I turned it into an opportunity. And now I'm about to move across the country at some point.
See, that's the stuff I was going to get into. So listen. So, because I'm super excited about the class, we're going to be taking them together. You're taking it for a different reason, because you're getting into acting. I'm taking it because it's going to be good for the podcast, and it's going to be phenomenal for my comedy. So we're decided that we're taking it together. Our first class is next week, Monday.
Yep, 6 to 9.
It's an 8-week course.
Yep.
So I think the best thing for us to do is to check in again halfway. We'll do a podcast halfway through to see how the course is going. And then we'll do another one at the end of the course. So do another two, just to kind of check in.
Yes.
So that's super exciting. And that's one of the big things I want to talk about.
You guys are going to see a brand new person. I'm not lying. Going to be different.
If you get bougie on me, I swear to God, I'm gonna call you out. And I'm gonna dress like a bum when I tell
you. What do you mean? Whatever do you mean?
This was being recorded, you guys. You took it on a completely different character right now. Just practicing. This acting class is gonna be.
I'm the shit.
Yeah. You are.
Guys, you gotta speak it into existence. I'm speaking everything into existence. Every goal I've written down, I've either hit or I'm on my way to hitting. So.
Oh, one more. God, man. Morning pages. You've been doing morning pages. Like, we've been a little sporadic with it.
Yeah, but it's been more consistent.
It's been way more consistent, and we have a routine. Like, we'll do the morning pages in the morning, and one of us will take a picture of, like, one of the pages, just trying to hold each other accountable.
Yep.
That's been going really good.
Yep.
But what I wanted to ask you about that before we go is, have you noticed a difference in your writing, like your everyday writing, since you started doing morning pages?
I do. I feel like things that I didn't feel like writing, like I can write everything.
Yeah.
I just get it done. I was supposed to draft a letter for my job, like an invitation for a city council member to come to one of our events. I was writing it while I was still on the phone, while they were telling me what I needed to write.
It's nothing, right?
And it was just like... And usually, it's always been nothing, but I've been going through such, like, a blah with writing because I
like
just
haven't... Like a
blah. Yeah, I used to spit out everything. It got me back to being able to just spit out anything like I used to.
It's the
so.
Same thing. And, like,
morning
it's made such...
Real.
It's a real deal. I'm telling you. Like, that just... It works with that blockage. When you wake up in the morning, you have all that junk... You just get it out of your mind, and something about writing on a piece of paper with a pen, just getting your thought through your hand to the paper, I don't know, it just clears a certain path, and all of a sudden you just
help me flowing. Start doing checklists, just writing down every single one of my goals. I'm going to Nogi Worlds this time. I'm hoping to bring back that gold. I'm gonna bring back that gold.
Yeah.
Not gonna get injured. I'm speaking
everything
out.
Dates and everything next to
literally everything. I've been writing down everything.
Same thing. I melt writing pads now. That's one of my favorite things to do.
Go through them.
Yep.
It's great because, I'm gonna try a vision board next.
That's what I'm doing next too.
Yeah,
I'm definitely doing all these things. They sound, I'm a grown ass man talking about the vision board. But when you realize how powerful it is, and you look at that board, and you're like, all right, that's one of the things I wanted to achieve or obtain, or one of the goals that I'm fixating my mind on right now. When you look back a year later on your vision board, and you have that watch on your wrist, or you did that trip and you have the pictures from it, or whatever it is, it makes it real. So it's funny to joke about it and laugh about it, but morning pages, vision boards, visualization, meditation, all those things are extremely powerful.
Everybody I know who's done a vision board has either gotten, it's like accomplished everything on that vision board or on their way to, and that includes like putting a family with the amount of kids.
Yeah,
you want,
it's insane.
Crazy.
It's insane.
Like a dog.
Yeah,
like,
it's just a constant reminder. It's like an alarm clock for your ambition.
And you can change it. Definitely change it. But the fact that I'm writing down my stuff and I'm making
it's
all
huge.
I wrote down. I'm doing everything. I'm starting to do everything that
we talked about. Me and you have been talking about writing stuff down. We both battled with it, right, for like a year now, and I'd be like, when you come to me, you say you have something serious going on. I'm like, did you write it down? You're like, no. So I'm like, you ain't serious. How many times have I did that? You're like, oh, I did this. I'm like, did you write it down? You're like, no. And the conversation ends.
Yeah.
Now it's just like, did you write it down? What do you mean, did I write it down?
I
wrote down a week ago.
I wrote down something else that sparked that I forgot to tell you.
It's true.
But literally.
It's a big difference.
Everything. And like, I'm not going to sit here because, there's like, don't put everything on social media. Like, sometimes you want to, because some people will come to me and say, the stuff that you post on social media,
it
helps me.
It is.
Whether
true.
It's funny or inspirational.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't do that so that I can humble brag about anything. One, I'm either just trying to promote and get my, utilize my master's with new media management because it's digital media. So I've been trying to work more with social media. Or I'm literally just trying to show people, like, my life isn't perfect. I struggle
so much, but no matter what,
I'm always going to persevere.
And you do that.
So
definitely.
And anybody can do it. Anybody can do it. You really just have to believe that you can. Really just have to put that work in. And you have to do it in a smart way. Denzel Washington said, don't mistake movement for progress.
Wow. That's a good one.
And sometimes I felt like I was just doing a lot of things here, a lot of things there, and like it wasn't all coming together. But now I started making sure that all the things I'm doing are related to the one thing I want to accomplish or related to the things I'm trying to get done.
Guys, listen to what she's saying because that's 100% true. Like, having purpose, being methodical with things that you do, it all comes back to...
Whether it's jujitsu, that's coming together now too because I'm starting to get out of my own head.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. It all comes back, but... Once you start putting purpose to what you're doing, even like you said with jiu-jitsu, even with putting purpose to why you're moving, instead of just like moving to move, there's a purpose. This is what I'm trying to achieve. When you do that throughout your day with your activities or even with your checklist, like Anthony, the CEO of Sticker Mule, he always told me about...
Of the shirt you're wearing right now?
Yeah.
Hey.
He's always so aware of time and how much time he has within that day to get certain things done. So he's always focused on the most important thing he can get done at any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it is just hanging out with his friends and catching up because he hasn't spent time with them in a long time. But the older I get, the more protective I get with my time and the more aware I am of my time and what I'm doing and what the end goal is,
Question. How many hours are in a week?
Jesus, why would you do that?
168.
There's 168.
168. Yeah. My dad, at an early age, he made sure we knew all of that because he said, when you know how many hours you're dealing with in the week, you use them all with a purpose. You use them the way that they're... Like, you don't waste
That's
time.
True. That's true.
And it's true. Because... Oh, it was funny because I had... Like, I've never had anybody else ask me that question but my dad. And... This one guy, CEO of two businesses, I believe he owns both of them as well. He asked me how many hours were in a week, and I was like, 168.
Oh,
he was like,
Wow.
Nobody really knows it. He's like, but when you understand that, you know what you're working with. And he's somebody who's very methodical about how he uses his time. And he has to use it, like, you know, he does a lot of stuff.
He's
got to
be a specialist with that. Yeah.
He works with the Department of Homeland Security. Yeah. He works with, like, the NFL. Like, he works with a lot of big people to where he's traveling all the time. And he has kids and he has a family.
Yeah,
so he has to be, you know.
On point.
Calendar
and
his hours.
Every hour, yeah.
You need to know. And that's one thing I want to get better with is actually mapping out my hours of the day.
And you will. You will. You come so far with the whole writing things down, developing good habits. And you're one of the very few people that when you look at something, a way to improve yourself, you actually apply it to your life. There's not a lot of people do that. All these people read all these self-help books and they write these little, they don't even write things in notes. They just pick up these little gems of brilliance and how to live their life better, but they don't do anything with it. Like, I've actually seen you grow from someone that just talks about doing stuff to now someone that writes it down, meditates, visualizes, and sees it through creation, you know?
It was actually it's like a quick point. It was actually like kind of like a religious thing. So in Islam, they talk about how I was listening to something. It was like how God loves it more when you take smaller steps in the way of progress, opposed to just these big,
huge leaps,
huge actions. So like maybe if you donate $50,000 to a church, as opposed to like, you know, maybe one day you do this prayer and then one day you do two prayers.
Wow.
And then another day you do three.
Yeah.
He appreciates the smallest. It was told to me that he appreciates the smaller gestures in the way of God than the huge ones.
Flagrant ones, yeah.
So I applied that to other areas of my life. And I stopped beating myself up when I would try to work out really heavy for one day and then not work out for 5 days.
Yeah.
I started incrementally building myself up, doing like, okay, I'll do 10 push-ups today. Maybe I'll push myself and do 11, and then I have to do more than I did the next day.
That's so.
And I just constantly build myself up, and I do that with my writing. So I don't beat myself up if I miss a day.
Yeah, no.
I'm doing more than I used to do, you know?
Yeah,
I just
true.
Start over. I start again.
Yeah, it's
I start
so true.
Again, and I keep building
and
that
up. You know what's really cool about that, too, is when we're holding each other accountable, we don't even get each other. We don't even get on each other about it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you did it. You know,
it's just like, you did it today? Great.
That's awesome. Great.
Not like, oh, did you do it today? Or no, get after it again tomorrow.
That's it. That's it. Because stuff happens. But the fact that you're doing something, it's way better. And you understand the you know, compounding interest and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in it even more so. But there are certain days that you just didn't do it.
You can hold people accountable without making them feel like crap for
yeah.
falling short.
It's so
like,
true.
Like, that's not what accountability
yeah.
is.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that have it wrong and they feel
yeah.
like,
accountability,
you know,
is like, oh, you're not getting this done?
Exactly.
You suck.
Exactly.
No, it's not that.
And then
it's,
you have that crappy feeling on top of the crappy feeling of, you know, you didn't get it done. Now you just feel like a shitty person.
Yeah.
Where they're two completely unrelated things.
Like, Danilo was good with that. The first time I started doing a macro diet
mm-hmm.
or started on my macro diet was a couple months ago when I was studying for the bar, and I was making an excuse, but I didn't want to devote brain power to both.
No,
it,
fair
like,
enough.
The way food.
They're
and all
exhausting,
that,
yeah.
You know, so I was like, I'm not doing it. But I kept falling off, and I was like, oh, I'm going to get it tomorrow, or I'm going to do it next time. And he's like, you don't have to talk to me about it. He's like, this is your progress.
That's awesome.
And I was like, I know, but I still want to. Like, he was keeping me accountable without making me, because I was just like, nah,
bad.
You're right. Like, I don't have to explain it to you, but I wanted to
yeah.
explain it, but it didn't matter, because if I didn't do it for myself, then I wasn't going to see the results,
that's
and
true.
That's the only person who's
that's
affected
the only
by
that
it.
Matters, yeah.
Now I'm holding myself completely accountable. I don't even really check in with him like that.
Yeah.
Anymore, because I know I don't have, like, I'll, you know, if I have questions, I will, but I know what I'm supposed
yeah,
to be doing.
Yeah, you know what you need to do.
And I'm doing it, and I'm being more strict about it, but I also started off small. It's like,
yeah.
start off, you know, with doing it this way, and then progress to this, and that's what I did, and that's what I'm doing, and it starts to get easier over time. You just got
wow.
small, consistent
steps. Right.
No big chunks. Don't take,
right.
like, a huge bite out of it.
Yeah.
Just start small. If you can do one thing one day, do that thing.
Yeah.
But make sure you do that thing.
And that's the hardest part. Showing up is the hardest part.
Yeah.
Everyone has said that to me when I was in high school. I remember my coach would say it all the time. No, the hardest part is showing up. And some people think that's just physically getting up and going there. That's not it. Showing up means
mentally.
Yes. And some people just don't show up. They're
yeah.
there.
But they're not there.
But they're just not there.
They're not
there.
Present.
No. And that's the biggest difference. And even with open mics, with comedy, even with the podcast, like, my biggest, like, if I wish I could have done something different, I wish I could have been more consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand there's things that happen in life that can derail you from those things, but I also feel moving forward that I have to find a different way to deal with those things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because that consistency, with podcasts, with comedy, the people that are where I want to be with podcasts is because they're so consistent.
Yeah.
They're not super talented about what they're talking about. They're not super engaging, but they're just so consistent that you have to recognize them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And same thing with the comedians. There's some really talented people that go to Comedy Works that are doing the open mic, and they're getting better and better and better just because they've been so goddamn consistent, you know? And I'll get there, but I have to be consistent with those things. And I have to be like you, like with that, with the bar. You had all these things that were going on around you. They were just exploding. This person's doing this. That person's doing this. And you were car accident and people passing. And you were just like, I got to focus on this. You know? And that's really what you got to do. And that's it sets you apart from everybody else if you can just focus. You know, Bill Gates said, what do you think is one of the biggest attributes to your success? And he's like, my ability to focus.
It's true. Really it. That's really it. It's really
focused. It's one of the hardest things to do, too.
You know, it just dawned on me that when I told that story about, you know, the thing I didn't want to talk about before, if two people listen to this, they're both going to think it's probably them.
Oh, that's funny. Well, that's how it usually works. That's usually how it works.
But hey. All
right, we got to wrap it up.
Love y'all anyway.
Hey, thank you for another great show.
No, like we said,
you. In 4 week mark, we'll be back here again doing the same thing.
Yes!
I'm super excited about that.
Because we are what's good.
That's what's good.
What's
good.
That's
what's up. That's what's up. All right. Another good episode. Wrapping it up. Thank you guys for joining. Look forward to the next episode, which is episode number 24.
Oh,
and
snap.
Then I got episode number 25.
Damn.
And then it's a wrap. And then I got to set another goal.
Because that was the goal. Because that's what we do.
Yeah,
that's yes. What we do. Hit goals. And make them bigger.
And crush them. Crush them.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Step one, set goals you can't achieve until you grow into the person who can. Step
that's
two,
dope.
Never stop growing.
That's
I
dope.
Made that part up.
I like that. All right, that's a good way to end it. All right,
good night,
thanks again, guys.